Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on January 9th, 2021, and is current through the Star Trek Discovery Season 3 finale, The Hope Is You, Part 2. So beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We're in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 6 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is returning guest Abby Summer. Abby, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Thanks so much, Alex. Always happy to be here to talk Trek.
All right, Abby. Well, you know the drill. I want to know something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
Well, it was kind of a hard choice today because there are so many things that have made life better with Star Trek lately. But I finally landed on one that's been making me happy this entire season of Discovery, which is Wilson Cruz and his portrayal of Hugh Culber. I have enjoyed Wilson Cruz back since his first big gig on My So-Called Life. And not only is he an incredible actor, he is an incredible person in the real world. And Dr. Culber on this season of Discovery has had such heartwarming and deep emotional moments. And I have really enjoyed seeing him come into his own and be in the series more since, you know, he was dead for a large part of the first 2 seasons. And I have enjoyed seeing him as a professional, as a husband, as a father figure, as a friend, as a counselor, verbally sparring with Georgiou. I can't think of a single scene in this season of Discovery where I haven't just completely and thoroughly enjoyed his character. And then when you look at him outside of the show, he is always positive. He is always kind. He supports the fans. He engages. He's looking to make the world a better place. Star Trek couldn't ask for a better ambassador than he is.
Yeah, the character has really had, I mean, obviously, you know, this quite significant journey over the course of 3 seasons. I mean, I think you could say that of all the characters, you know, maybe the characters with the more significant journeys, you know, you're really only maybe talking about Burnham, Saru, like, maybe that's about it, right? I mean, this is a character who in season 1, he died.
Yep.
In season 2, he was resurrected. And so it's really not been until this season that we have like actually gotten the opportunity to see Dr. Culber as a doctor and not a man who was dead and then a man who was alive again and grappling with what it meant to be alive again. I mean, that really was his sort of season 2 arc. And so this sort of emergence in season 3 of the character as getting the opportunity to actually sort of be a doctor. And as with all things Discovery, the chain of command on the ship is pretty unclear, but like, you know, is he the chief medical officer at this point? He might be, because whoever was the chief medical officer before might not have gone with them into the future since we've not been right. introduced to them. But anyway, you know, to sort of take on this, certainly in the eyes of the series, leadership role as it relates to meeting the crew's medical needs, it's been really great to see. And it's been, and it's also just been really nice that, like, you know, a lot of fans really didn't like the decision to kill him off in season 1. And I think that was a perfectly fair reaction to that. And then, you know, they sort of spent the whole of season 2 on doing that. And obviously that's a big decision to both make to do it and then a big decision to make to undo it. And so it's going to take some runway room in order to do so. But it's just, in some ways, this is sort of probably the Dr. Culber we should have gotten right from the beginning. But it's, you know, it's fabulous that we're getting such a great character now in season 3.
I agree. And just the layers that they've added into him. I mean, little things that could be throwaway, but really serve to flesh him out. I mean, the whole haiku at Saru's dinner that imploded was just so little and silly, but such a great little moment to see him as a person as well. And I love how when they jumped into the future, he wholeheartedly embraced every new medical discovery, every new medical term, every new gadget, every new option. And he seems to be using that to help him on his path and his journey and seeing it as an opportunity, whereas some people were thinking about it as a loss. And I think that comes from the fact that he had already had that loss and had a different perspective. And that was so helpful to the character and to the crew as a whole.
I think the thing I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week, I'm going to keep it current and I'm going to talk about the finale for season 3,
yes,
which I thoroughly enjoyed. It's my favorite of the three finales Discovery has done to date, with these sort of long serialized arc-based stories. You know, there is this sort of question of like, will they stick the landing of that whole season arc? And honestly, like, I think this is the first season long arc that they sort of have kind of stuck the landing for. I really enjoyed this most recent episode. It is my favorite of the Discovery season finales. I could go on and talk about it, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to unpack. We'll talk a bit about more in this episode. We'll talk a bit about it more next week's episode when we do some of the press roundup from the finale. But one of the things that struck me when I got to the end of that episode was how much I had enjoyed it without the episode having to have relied significantly in some kind of trip to the nostalgia well in order to enhance the experience, right? So let's look at the four other season finales of sort of Kurtzman era Star Trek. We'll set aside the Lower Decks finale because that is still my favorite of the Kurtzman era Star Trek finales. I just think that's phenomenal. But Discovery Season 1, Discovery Season 2, Picard Season 1, all three of them, I think, were aided by that trip to the nostalgia well. The first season Discovery finale, in my opinion, is not a good episode until the Enterprise shows up, right? It's like those final few seconds sort of rescue what was a really very choppy end to what was otherwise a really good season. Season 2, seeing the Enterprise was fabulous. Being on the Enterprise was amazing. You know, obviously it was a very action-packed episode, but they still didn't get that kind of calibration right between the action and the character scenes, and the fact that it was the Enterprise and Spock, and you know, you were seeing everybody in the sort of TOS style uniforms, like that I think sort of buoyed that season finale as well. And then the Picard season one finale, you know, the appearance of Riker. But this was the very first one where this was a finale about these characters and only these characters. And you know, people had sort of said, well, you know, what kind of surprises are going to be, are we going to get, you know, they've talked about the Federation president. Is it going to turn out to be a familiar face, right? Like something stupid, like, is it going to be Robert Picardo playing the doctor from Living Witness who has traveled back to the Federation as now the Federation president? I'm honestly thrilled they did none of that. Like, this was just an episode about these characters closing out this story that they've told over the course of this season. And it was a much more rich and rewarding experience for me as a result. As much as I love the nostalgia, it was still really nice to see them do a season finale for a Star Trek show that is just about the show that they have built over three seasons and wasn't trying to tie back to something that we loved from a previous era of Star Trek.
I agree that those are all completely valid and correct. And as much as I love the nostalgia too, it was good to see everyone stand on their own. And I also appreciated that they didn't feel the need to make this a cliffhanger. It's like they knew we were invested and loved the Discovery crew enough that they could do this without relying on either one of those things. And I am not ashamed to admit, I cried at the end of this one. Like, I just got hit in all the right places. And with everything that's been going on in the world and with the pandemic, it was so nice to just have a hopeful ending that just made you feel like, yeah, we did wrap this up and we connected our threads and it's good. And that was absolutely what I needed.
Yeah, same. I love a good cliffhanger, but I also like when, particularly this kind of story where you have these sort of season-long arcs, that you do get that kind of very sort of clear sense of resolution to them before you move on to something else. And, you know, we got that with Picard season 1, 2, and now with Discovery season 3. And I think given the potential for quite a long wait before new Star Trek comes back into our lives, you know, maybe it is kind of a nice thing that they sort of tied them up in a bow so that when we get new live action Star Trek back late this year, early next year, you know, we're starting off fresh rather than, oh, I got to go back to the cliffhanger and remind myself about what happened in the last few minutes of the last episode that I watched.
Exactly.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on. I'm a reporter.
So over the holidays, IO9's James Whitbrook published a fabulous two-part interview with Star Trek Discovery's Doug Jones, who plays Saru. The interview was published prior to the season finale, so they don't get into how Saru's story ends for the season, but they do talk at length about Saru's journey through to the final episodes of season 3 and the surprise decision to have Doug Jones appear beginning in Sukal without makeup. About his reaction when he read that Saru would appear in the episode Sukal and the Hope Is You Part 2 as a human, Jones said, "When I saw the script for the first time, I had two reactions. One was, oh good. The other was, oh no. You can imagine the good part was, I don't have to wear silicone rubber glued to my face. I can get my own snacks from the craft service table. I can undo my own pants when it's bathroom time. There's so many pluses, right? Then the oh no part was, I played humans many times in my 35-year career, but I have never played Saru as a human. This is terrifying. Can I pull this off? Will fans buy it?" Jones also talked about how he adapted the physicality of Saru to his new human appearance. "Saru is part of me," he said. "I know him really well. So without the look, I can still channel his insides, his heart, his soul, his intention, and his voice. The speech pattern was the first starting place. That could stay pretty much the same. What the biggest change was, okay, how do I stand? How I walk? How I hold myself? How I gesture? Not quite all the way human like I am when I'm Saru." In addition to talking about his appearance as a human, Jones also discussed his kinship with Saru around the character's growing desire for hearth and home, which we saw play out in the season finale. "I turned 60 this year in my real life. The older I get, the more nostalgic I get for home, for my family. Saru is kind of on that same journey," Jones said. "Now that he has not seen another Kelpian face and the chance to see one again and to be of help to them and to maybe get back to the homeworld of Kaminar, is there a potential for me to go to Kaminar? All this is tugging at his heart so much." Well, Abby, did you enjoy Saru's arc through season 3 of Discovery, and where do you think it might be headed next?
I just enjoy Saru all the time. I think he's one of the characters that I resonate the most with on Discovery because he has had a journey and grown into his confidence, and we see him always kind of being a little bit of the other. We don't know a lot of Kelpians. There aren't a lot of Kelpians around, and he seemed to have missed the time in the Federation when there were Kelpians all over the place. So I get that. It resonates with me. And I hope they find a way for him to still be in every single episode next season, because I know there was one episode this season where, you know, we're focusing on what's going on in Discovery. We're not seeing him. And I missed it. I felt that absence of that calming presence in there. And as much as I love seeing Doug Jones out of makeup, and it was a lovely surprise that I am so glad they didn't spoil in the trailers the week before, when the holograms all went away and they're on the ship that's falling apart and they pan around and show everybody normal and you see him in full prosthetics as Kelpian Saru, it just felt right. And maybe that's a rude thing to say because he wears so much monster makeup and so many creature makeup in all his roles that when I see him as a real person, it just feels like it's not all of him. But I love how he said that Saru is part of him and always will be a part of him. I think maybe he'll come back as an ambassador or a special mission specialist or first contact specialist, because he obviously showed in this season that he can connect to people and different races and has that deep history and that deep empathy to the people who've been kind of alone for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out next season. I mean, obviously, you know, the elephant in the room is they've made the decision to promote Burnham to captain, and as the season ends, it appears she is in command of the USS Discovery and Saru is back on Kaminar. And so, you know, what role will he play in season 4? I mean, it's obvious that he's not leaving the show. We know Doug Jones is in Toronto filming Discovery,
and he's shaved his head again, so we know that he's in makeup.
Exactly. We know he's in makeup, we know he's up there, we know he's been up there the whole time, so it's not like this character is going away from the show. But yeah, it's certainly interesting to see, you know, what will happen next with him. I do have a theory, and it's actually going to be my theory for this week about where they will take things from here. So I won't say too much about it more at this point, other than just to say, you know, it'll be really interesting to see kind of how they decide to play that out. But as you sort of look back over the arc of this character over 3 seasons, there is something really wonderfully poignant about the character having had the opportunity to visit a Kaminar that is one where, you know, it's 900 years after the liberation of the Kelpians from Ba'ul oppression. It seems like they have sort of worked out their differences and have created a thriving planet, certainly far more technologically sophisticated in that final shot than what we saw when we visited the planet in the 23rd century. I mean, for a season that is about the power of connection, Saru having that opportunity to go home to the kind of home that he would want to return home to is really just exceptionally powerful. And I think, as much as I'm sure that there are going to be some people who are disappointed that Saru did not end the season in the captain's chair, it does also at the same time feel right for the character. And just because he's not in Discovery's captain's chair at this point, maybe doesn't mean he won't be in another one, but I'll save that for the end of the episode.
And I think it was nice at the very end of the episode where they said it was Saru's choice to step down. He talked to Michael about it, and he wanted this sabbatical of sorts off to Kaminar to take the time and make that connection. And that's important. And that seems very genuine and authentic to the character.
Well, continuing Discovery Cast interview week, Forbes published a nice profile of Mary Wiseman, who plays Tilly following Terra Firma parts 1 and 2. I love her and I feel very protective over her, Wiseman said about the character of Tilly. I probably have never had such a deep relationship with a person I've played. Wiseman, who studied at Juilliard alongside Mary Chifo, who you will remember played Laurel in seasons 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery, revealed that the two of them continue to joke that they got cast as the wrong characters for their natural personality types. Like, Mary is kind of a Tilly person in real life, Wiseman said. She's so full of life and energy. She's so sweet and so empathetic and kind. She is an amazing warrior woman, but she has that Tilly thing to her so much. And I can be more of a protective mama, fierce, you know, aggressive, so maybe a little more like Laurel. And about her star turn in Terra Firma, finally showing us the actual Captain Killy after impersonating the character as our Tilly in season 1, Wiseman said, I was definitely informed by that section of season 1, but I also tried to build it from scratch a little bit based on the circumstances of this fascist world they all live in, surrounded by genocidal maniacs. I tried to build something a little different. It was tricky, but it was a really, really fun and satisfying challenge, and I'm happy with how it came out. But the interview did not just touch on her experience with the character, but also, sadly, some of the personal attacks that Wiseman has faced as the character for her appearance. I noticed there's definitely been an uptick in body shaming towards me and Tilly this season, which was harrowing because I'm a person, I have a history, and bullying is totally a part of that, Wiseman said. So it has been hard, and it's really hard to avoid because it pops up on all the social media accounts or people comment on my posts with cruel, unscientific comments. She went on to say that despite how cruel social media could be, it is also a source of strength for her, given all the fans who jumped to her defense. I just want to say that all the people who step in to back me up like that, your presence is like little angels, like blocking out all these little trolls. It means something to me. Well, it's a long profile and it's worth checking out the whole thing. You can find the link to the Forbes profile if you go over to TrekCore and check the show notes for this episode, to also hear Wiseman's thoughts about her co-stars and acting alongside her real-life husband, Noah Averback Katz, in season 3. Abby, have you enjoyed Tilly's journey throughout season 3?
I love Tilly as well, and I love that Star Trek has always had a history of showing people who aren't 100% confident and who aren't sure of themselves and who are growing into their roles. Because as much as we love our bridge crews and our people who are very confident and ready to go and are trained, seasoned officers, there's a lot of people who are still coming up and learning, just like she has this entire show. And that is such an aspirational thing to see. And I swear, the Discovery cast is just a collection of some of the nicest, most genuine people on the planet, because every profile you read of any character, you think, man, I just want to hang out with these people. They seem like my friends. They're, you know, going out there and trying to promote acceptance and love and tolerance and joy, but still having that kind of steel center of knowing who you are and what you believe in. And that's what I've always gotten from both the actress and the character. That she's got so much innate power in there that she just has to channel out. And I heard this interview in her voice when I read it, because she is so, so present in her words when she says them. And I have really enjoyed her this season. I know the jump to, you know, the first officer was a little bit of a controversial decision, and I wasn't sure when I first watched it, but watching her go toe-to-toe with Osira gave me chills. So that was fantastic. And as a curvier woman myself, you know what, trolls? You can go sit on a rock somewhere far away and cry your sad little tears, because this is a powerful, intelligent woman, and she's going to keep being so no matter what you say.
Yeah, hear to that for sure. And as it relates to the character, I don't think you can watch those last two episodes and, you know, sort of come away from that with the belief that, like, this isn't a character who is one day going to be a captain.
Exactly.
And also a character who, like, doesn't have the chops to kind of do this stuff right now. I might have talked about this a little bit on a previous episode, but I think the appearance of Captain Killy in Terra Firma was sort of the perfect reminder of, like, look, it's the same person, right? Mirror Universe, you know, obviously more of a fascist, aggressive, evil version of this same person, but ultimately the same person, right? They've sort of gone to great lengths to demonstrate that mirror versions of yourself have the same potential, the same ability to do stuff. It might just be buried by other experiences. And in the Mirror Universe, Tilly is a captain at the age she is now in Discovery as an ensign. And the show has told us that going all the way back to season one. So, like, it shouldn't be that much of a surprise that the character is very good in a command role, because we already know that they have it within them to do that. And so I have really enjoyed that kind of emergence of the character into that role over the course of season three. It's really interesting. They seem to have made a correction in post-production. If you compare the on-set photos of that final scene when they're all in the new uniforms with what you see on screen, they changed the color of Tilly's uniform. When they shot it, she was wearing Command Red. When it aired, they had changed it in post-production to blue.
I saw that too.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see where they kind of go with that. Like, is she going to be the kind of permanent first officer? It does appear like she did not get a promotion by the end of the episode. She was still an ensign. But, you know, I'm really excited to see where the kind of command journey for Tilly goes. And I'm also thrilled that this is a show that has embraced representation, not just from the perspective of sexual identity or gender identity, but also race, and now also different kinds of body types as well, which is an important kind of frontier of representation that I think that television has also done a particularly horrific job of.
Agreed.
And sort of, you know, come away from it the perspective of, like, you know, it's not just the sort of Olympic athletes amongst us who could be in Starfleet, that maybe there are, you know, since we all stand behind a console all day anyway, you know, maybe there are roles for folks like us too.
Exactly. And, you know, when you look back at older series, there's some admirals that have quite a bit of heft behind them as well.
Oh, sure.
So it's nice to see that it's extending to all of the genders or sexual identities or any of that out there too, because a lot of times the men can get away with stuff that the women can't. And
for sure.
No way. No way. And you know what? We know Tilly loves to eat. We've seen that multiple times. I mean, spumoni, salsa, right. We have... And that's okay, because she's a character who loves life. And part of loving life, at least in my experience, is enjoying the sensory aspects, which includes eating. And you know what? She can be very healthy and very curvy. And that is absolutely fine. She ran that marathon. We know she did fine. So let's just drop that as even something we need to consider anymore.
Well, Mary Wiseman isn't the only member of her immediate family who has been doing the interview rounds. Noah Averback-Katz, who is Mary's husband and plays the character of Rin in several episodes of Discovery this season, has given a number of interviews about he, as a huge Star Trek fan, ended up on the show. In an interview on the Trek Profiles podcast, Averback-Katz revealed that Rin was not the first character he auditioned for on Discovery. I actually auditioned for Spock, which was interesting because the script they had Spock was coded as an Andorian named Tom. But as a Star Trek fan, I knew right away this was a Vulcan. This was not an Andorian. You're not fooling me. I auditioned for that and they liked that. It was clear I had a relationship with the material. And then this part, Rin, came up and I was in Toronto at the time and flew to New York and auditioned for it and just kind of got it from there. Averback-Katz also talked about how he drew upon Jeffrey Combs' portrayal of Shran in developing Rin. I think what Jeffrey Combs lays a blueprint out for is that this haughtiness and confidence in Andorians is covering a deep emotional sensitivity, a deep emotional well. And so my approach for Rin is that we pick up when he's at the bottom. He's already had this moment, which is alluded to in Scavengers, where he has brought this confidence, this swagger, and tried to knock down this character, Osira, that he feels is unjust, and he's failed, and he's hit absolute rock bottom. Unfortunately, Rin won't be joining Discovery in season 4 after the character was killed off in the penultimate episode of the season, There Is a Tide. However, the actor is in Toronto right now supporting his wife and also pitching in by helping Discovery cast Unwind by hosting Dungeons & Dragons role-playing sessions for several cast members, including Anthony Rapp. "You know, it's been a weird time," he said, "because while everyone is up here shooting, they get to spend their days at work together. Masks, very safe, lots of really, really necessary but very intense protocols. There's not a time outside of set for people to socialize, which sucks because that was one of the most fun things about this cast. It's a very social cast. They have a lot of fun together. Everybody gets along really well, so having that taken away has been a bummer. So I thought that D&D could be an opportunity for people to find a time to hang out, to make some new stories together, and to not be focused on work for a little while. Abby, do you hope we'll see Noah Avabat Katz back in season 4 of Discovery as maybe a different alien character given the fate of Rin?"
I hope so. I mean, if Ken Mitchell can do it, they can definitely do it for him. And I love that these two stories we're talking about are back to back, because I kind of feel like Mary and Noah are rising as the new first couple of our Star Trek world.
Yep.
And they are both delightful. This profile of Noah just makes my heart happy, because this is someone who has so much joy being able to contribute to something that has given him joy. And if you look at the pictures of him as a kid dressing up and going to conventions and, you know, photo ops with cast and crew, all the way up to him actually being on set, the joy is just palatable, and it's wonderful. And the fact that he set his pictures to Faith of the Heart as his music, just it hit me right in the right spot. I'm like, this is someone who gets it and who loves it. And I would love to see him come back as more. I would love for him to be a bigger and more prominent part of this Star Trek family, because it kind of feels like he's already gotten in. And I loved Rin. I thought it was a great portrayal of a species we haven't seen in a while. And going back and having to watch Jeffrey Combs, brilliant and delightful, because I could see those parallels there. And what the deep emotion that he played was very consistent with what you saw with Shran in the past. So bravo all around to Noah.
Yeah, he did a great job. And given COVID and everything going on, I mean, since he's in the production bubble and he is an actor, like, why not, right? Because
exactly.
That's one less person you have to kind of pull in from the outside, have them quarantine for 2 weeks, and then kind of introduce them to whatever the on-set protocols are in order to keep everybody safe. So I would love to see him back. I thought he did a great job. And it's nice anytime, Jen and I talked a bit about this on the last episode, the sort of year in review episode, but it's so nice when a Star Trek fan gets the opportunity to live out their dream, because
yep.
It, you know, sort of, it allows us to live vicariously through them in doing so.
Exactly, because I'll never have the confidence or desire to actually walk on a set, but I like to watch him doing it and just going off on about how wonderful it is, because that joy is what we need in this time in the world.
And lastly this week, looking ahead to what might be coming next for live action Star Trek, given all the delays caused by COVID-19, the schedule for Star Trek Picard season 2 has already slipped a little more. We talked a few episodes ago about how it looked like production for Star Trek Picard season 2 was going to start in January, but in a tweet just before the holidays, Jerry Ryan confirmed that production of the second season has now been delayed to February the 1st. Unfortunately, I think that might slip further, given that Los Angeles is a particularly bad hotspot for COVID-19 infections right now. Literally right as we're recording this episode, I just got a push alert from the New York Times saying that they are approaching 1 in 10 Los Angeles residents having an active COVID infection right now. So 10% of the population of that city.
Ugh.
And even though television productions are exempt from stay-at-home orders in the state, LA officials have urged studios to temporarily suspend production until cases get back under control. Many have complied, and so we may see that February 1st start date push later into the month or into March. Abby, obviously the delays are frustrating, but completely understandable given everything going on. But our disappointment aside, that, you know, it may be the case that Star Trek Picard is going to take even longer to get back into production. Once it does get back into production, are there any things that you're particularly interested in seeing in a second season of the show?
Absolutely. And of course, I'm going to preface all of this by, keep everybody safe. Vaccines are on the horizon. We know that Patrick Stewart falls in that just by his age, higher risk category, give him the shots, and then let's talk about it. Because when and if this would be something devastating, I don't know that I would handle it well. So keep him safe.
Absolutely.
And agreed. Everybody else as well, obviously. But if your name and your character is the series, we're definitely keeping you safe.
Yep.
But I hope that we see a bit more of what has kind of happened now that we've seen the Romulans be a little bit more exposed. I would like to see a lot of threads that were dropped and a lot of breadcrumbs picked up. I'd like to know more about the Rangers that Seven is working with. I'd like to see more about how Elnor responds to a lot of this. I'd like to see how Picard grapples with being a synth now. And is that going to become public knowledge to the galaxy or something that only stays very close to the people that were with him or that are on his crew? Because we know that that's a man who's wrestled with big issues in the past. And this is a big issue. This is a big change. I mean, he is fundamentally different now. So how is that going to affect where he goes from here and how he views himself and his relationships with others? And I really do hope that they follow through on the Raffi and Seven relationship that they dropped that one little quick glimpse of, because I think that would be a beautiful way to expand our universe again.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain, but it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guests give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Abby, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
All right, so this one's kind of funny because you sort of mentioned it a little bit before too, but what has been making me laugh and making me think a lot these past few weeks is, all right, we're in the future with Discovery. Who is this Federation president? And I have heard so many theories that I think might be good, theories that I think will never happen, and theories that are just plain out funny and make me laugh. So I've been collecting a few of those, and I'm going to go through them just real quick, and then I'll tell you kind of my thought at the end. But I've heard...
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, that of course it could be Kovich, glasses guy, as he's often referred to. It could be Michael's dad, which I thought interesting, but...
Interesting.
It could be the EMH from Voyager, again, which I not my favorite, but possible. It could be a changeling or founder. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of them. We don't know what's going on in other quadrants.
Yep. Interesting.
It could be a Soon of one type or another, or just a flat out synth. It could be.
Oh, interesting. I'd not even thought about that. Yeah.
It could be synth Picard, which, you know, they said they gave him an expiration date, but you know, it maybe not. It could be. And this one, if they did it right and found a way to make this work, it would make decades of my life feel complete, but I don't think it's going to happen. It could be a really, really old Archer who reveals he's been future guy all along and time travels all over the place.
Yep.
Really don't think that's likely, but I am dying for an end of the temporal Cold War and knowing who Future Guy is. So that would be interesting. And then the one that everyone just kind of throws out there, oh, it's Grudge. The president isn't a president, it's a queen. And my personal theory in there, some of those ideas were mine, a lot of them I've just collected from the ether, but I think it's somebody that we haven't seen yet, and I think it probably will be somebody who becomes more important and becomes a reoccurring character in season 4, but they haven't fully decided the direction when they filmed these scenes, so they didn't put anybody in. And now that they have season 4 mapped out and in production, we're going to see somebody else that we haven't seen before, and that opens up a lot of possibilities.
That's funny. Some of those ideas I hadn't even thought of or heard of. Synth Picard or Brent Spiner playing another Soon type android. Those are funny ideas. Yeah, I agree with you. I think they haven't made any decisions, because if that is the kind of character that you're going to introduce, you might as well introduce a character that's relevant to the story that you want to play, rather than just doing it for, you know, some kind of one-off sort of surprise or nostalgia factor, right? Like it being Brent Spiner or a Patrick Stewart or a Scott Bakula, Robert Picardo, etc., etc. Like, have it be a character from a race who is pivotal to whatever the season 4 of Discovery's story is. Like, that seems like it makes way more sense and is way more interesting than doing a kind of a stunt casting, so to speak.
Exactly. I feel like if they want to drop some of those ideas in somewhere, it fits better in Lower Decks. That does that already, has all these little cameos. And I love those too, but I would like this to be someone that is like like you said, more pivotal and more pertinent to the story that's ongoing.
Okay, so my theory is what's going to happen with Saru in season 4. So we get to the end of season 3, and by the end of season 3, we have two captains from our cast. We have Burnham and Saru, and we also have two now people who are capable of operating a spore drive in the form of Book and Stamets. And we have a Federation that, though it has discovered a supply of dilithium to sort of begin to regenerate the Federation, spore drive technology is still a really interesting one that they probably should want to pursue. So my theory is that in season 4, they will build a second Crossfield class starship so you can reuse the same sets, and that you will have Burnham in command of Discovery. You will have Saru in command of this other sister ship, and that you will have Book on spores on Discovery, and you will have Stamets on spores on this other ship. Obviously, you know, I'm sort of playing off of the tension at the end of the season between Burnham and Stamets on that. And then you could play out various different stories with both ships together, with each ship sort of apart, kind of more like that last three episodes where you had one set of the crew in one place, one set of the crew in a different place, and you kind of weave those stories together. So, Abby, what do you think about that?
That's a really interesting theory. And I've also been wondering how they're going to do the whole Burnham Stamets coming back together eventually, which I very much hope they do. And having a second ship is an interesting way to think about that. And then also thinking, if you've got two ships, does more of the crew split up? Like, are we going to have our bridge crew half and half? Are we going to have, you know, Stamets and Culber, are they both going over there or not? And then what about Adira? And so there's so many possibilities there. And it almost feels like widening our galaxy that little bit more too. That's a great theory.
And it would be sort of new for Star Trek. They dabbled in it in Enterprise season 4 when you had the addition of the Columbia and Trip goes over to the Columbia, but that was just for a couple of episodes. Now sort of take that idea further and like make it a two-ship show. I think there's something that's taken away as part of that because you're not having all those characters together all the time. So, you know, you do sort of have to come up with more reasons to bring the various different characters together, but it could be a really interesting path forward. And, you know, if the sort of goal of season 4 or the rest of the show is, you know, sort of bring hope back to this future that, you know, has gone through this really calamitous period, having access to a second ship could sort of open up some more story possibilities along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily want to go to all these planets who you haven't had a great deal of contact with in the past 100+ years without a buddy. I mean, that just seems like it might make logical sense to have a pair to go so that you can do more things and have more options in case the unexpected arises, which it often does in Star Trek.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Abby Summer, for joining me today. Abby, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
The best place to find me is on Twitter, and I'm Abby M. Summer. That's S-O-M-M-E-R.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Abby. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.